Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, January 25th. We'll hear now from New Yorker Washington correspondent Jane Mayer, one of the leading chroniclers of far-right power and influence in this country. She is author of the 2016 book, Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. She wrote an article in The New Yorker last year following the money behind Donald Trump's big lie about a stolen election. She also wrote the book about Clarence Thomas some years ago called Strange Justice, The Selling of Clarence Thomas. And her brand new New Yorker article looks at ties between Thomas's wife and right-wing groups that have an interest in issues before the Supreme Court. She writes, the claim that justices are politically neutral is becoming increasingly hard to accept, especially from Justice Thomas, whose wife, Virginia Thomas, is a vocal right-wing activist. So we'll talk about the conservative activism of Jenny Thomas and some of the issues she's involved in, which, by the way, are coming up in controversial cases appearing before the court, and also put it into the larger context of Jane's work following the money of far-right influence in the United States. Jane, welcome back to WNYC. It's always great to have you.
Thanks so much. I'm so glad to be with you.
So who is Jenny Thomas? You know, like, we rarely hear about Supreme Court spouses at all.
Well, you hear more about her than any of the others, I think. But she is, she's been married to Clarence Thomas, I guess, since about 1987. And she was a lawyer in her own right, though she doesn't practice. She's actually got a very small political lobbying firm in Washington that has unusually large access to powerful people, as she notes on her website, where she says she can access any door in Washington.
That's a lot of access. And I assume she means also the Supreme Court door? Or do you find in your reporting that she draws any line there because of who her husband is?
Well, this is the problem. Her work has been controversial for years because I think it's a combination of things. Part of it is the extremism of her politics. She's aligned herself with really some of the most kind of radical right-wing actors in the country and groups in the country. And many of them have brought business in front of the court. They've brought cases. They've stirred the issues that are in the center of these cases. And she's very, very vocal about this behind closed doors. And she's gotten herself quite tangled up in these groups that are in front of the court. And that's what I was writing about, because it's become a matter of kind of great concern right now to many people, partly because the issues that she's involved in and has been promoting so hard, and the people that she's been working with who are right in front of the court now, are on the verge of winning. And I think it's raised a lot of questions in sort of fair-minded people's minds about whether, you know, she has, you know, a thumb on the scale, basically, of the court, even though she doesn't have a seat there.
Can you give us some specific examples of what kinds of groups?
Yeah, I mean, actually, there's a great example just today. It came up yesterday. The court decided it's going to hear what could be a tremendously important case about affirmative action programs that Harvard University and the University of North Carolina use. And in that case, looking at at affirmative action that could affect many, many people across this country, Jenny Thomas is on the board of an organization that's filed a brief in the case, an amicus brief. She is actually on the advisory board of something called the National Association of Scholars, and it has pushed the issue of getting rid of affirmative action and has filed a brief in front of her husband. And so it's just, as a couple people have said to me, it's too close for comfort. It's slicing the bologna a little too thin. It creates an appearance problem that maybe, you know, if Clarence Thomas votes her way, that it's not a fair matter, but it's because his wife's involved in it. And that's a bad thing when people start thinking that that's how the court works.
Has Justice Thomas ever recused himself or been asked to recuse himself on the basis of his wife working too closely with somebody involved in a case?
Not that I know of, or that anybody else I interviewed could come up with an example of, not because of his wife. He did recuse himself once because of a family member that was at a school that was at the center of a case. But never, as far as I know, because of his wife. Yet there have been many calls for him to try to fix this problem, to either recuse or to ask her to get involved in politics in some other way where it's not a direct conflict with the court's work.
Want to give us another example? You gave us the newest, which is really interesting because this really happened even since your article was published. This case, which we'll be discussing in a separate segment later in the week, another attempt to have affirmative action in university admissions ruled unconstitutional. What's another example?
You know what? I think one of the most troubling examples that I came across was an example having to do with the Trump Muslim ban case, the so-called Muslim ban about banning Muslims from coming into the United States as immigrants. Mm-hmm. And in that instance, what I found out was that Jeannie Thomas was a paid consultant earning over $200,000 in 2017 and 2018 from a secret client who remains undisclosed unless you know where to look, which I finally found out. But this client is Frank Gaffney, who has a center called the Center for Security Policy. Frank Gaffney was hiring Jeannie Thomas while he was also submitting an amicus brief to the court in support of Trump. And she was getting paid by Gaffney. And again, that's a case that her husband was hearing. He took Trump's side. And that couple, as far as I can tell, earned over $200,000 at the same time by one of the people who was involved in that case. And none of this is visible in the disclosures, the financial disclosures from Clarence Thomas.
Does that violate the law in any way, the way you just laid it out?
Well, the rules for disclosing justices' finances are written in such a murky way. I had a terrible time trying to figure out whether it violated the rules or not. I mean, if it doesn't, then they need to close the loopholes. It really seems that they're written in a way, there's a gigantic loophole there where you can give money to a spouse of a justice if that spouse has a company and not have to disclose where the original source of that money is, who the client is. So, I mean, it's just, it's sort of the possibilities for bribery are huge there.
Jane, what do you think the standard should be for a Supreme Court justice recusing themselves over something that a spouse or any close relative does? I'm sure people in almost any walk of life, including the judiciary, including politics, will say, I'm not my spouse. I'm not my child. I'm not my parent. I'm not my sibling. I'm my own person doing my job, and they're doing what they do.
And many, many have said that over the years. There actually are very explicit rules for all the judges beneath the Supreme Court level on these issues that say that if a spouse has an interest in the outcome of a case, or if a spouse is a party to a case or involved in a case by being on the board of an organization that's involved in a case, all those kinds of reasons, there are explicit rules saying a judge should step aside, should recuse. And the reason is, even if it's not an actual conflict, even if a husband says, I don't listen to what my wife tells me to do, I'm not going to take her side on this issue, even if that may be the case, what we think in this country, according to the people I interviewed, is that the appearance of justice is just as important as the actual fact of justice, because it's why the public reveres the courts and respects their judgment, because we think it's fair. And even if we don't agree with the judgment, we don't think it's corrupt. And that appearance is incredibly important. And that's why there are rules for all the judges beneath the Supreme Court level that basically say, step aside if your spouse has a conflict. The Supreme Court is different. It doesn't adhere to the same code of justice that all of the other judges in the country do, because it's there's nobody above it who could enforce such rules. And also, it is a slightly different situation. There are only nine of them. And so if they recuse, it leaves the court with, you know, if one recuses, eight, and it could, you could have a split decision and then no answer. And so it's a little more complicated. But I mean, I think, you know, if there's any court that ought to be abiding by really fastidious, rigorous rules about ethics, it ought to be the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the land.
So you're bringing up a Clarence Thomas potential conflict of interest in this week's edition of The New Yorker. I think Howard of Manhattan wants to look back to something that happened 22 years ago. Howard, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hello, Brian. Hello, Jane. Yes, I seem to recall that this matter of a potential conflict or an actual conflict with the Thomases goes back at least to the contested election of 2000 in the Bush v. Gore litigation, when it went straight to the Supreme Court. And I seem to recall reading back then that Ginni Thomas was representing people with or parties with an interest in the outcome and the litigation. I think there was a moment where during the oral argument where I think it was Justice Thomas may have tipped his hand as to how he was leaning. But my point really is this. You're right when you talk about the appearance of impropriety and the appearance of fairness and everything else that goes along with it. But here, it's quite clear to me that Ginni Thomas is using her relationship with her husband, and it's completely understandable that she would do that, in order to make a substantial income. And the fact that Justice Thomas seems to be above, not above reproach, but above the law, quote unquote, there is no law. It's all about what's ethical and what's appropriate and what's professional. But I think it really does call into question his impartiality, or even the appearance of his impartiality.
Howard, I'm going to leave it there and get a response. And he really puts another wrinkle into this, Jane, one that connects with your other work about following the funding of far-right activities. You've been talking about Ginni Thomas's ideological interests perhaps being a conflict of interest for Clarence Thomas. The caller says maybe she's making a lot of money on this, too, because of who he is. Does your reporting indicate that?
Well, I mean, again, one of the problems is if you look at the financial disclosure forms, you're not going to see it right there, at least not easily. But certainly she made a fair amount of money from working for Frank Gaffney, his group, in 2017 and 2018. And the caller is correct that in 2000, she was working for the Heritage Foundation, and her job was preparing lists of people to be hired in a future Bush administration as the election was still being decided, and it was in front of the Supreme Court. So her interests, her work interests, and her salary were involved with picking people for a new administration at a time when the court hadn't even decided who was going to be president. And so there was a lot of complaint at that time. There's been a lot of complaint about Ginni Thomas all the way through all these years, and if anything, it's just become more and more flagrant. And right now, with the court deciding so many important issues, it's becoming much more of a sore spot with many people. I wanted to say one other thing, which is, lest anybody think we're just picking on Clarence Thomas here, the thing is, he presents a very different attitude towards these issues than others on the court. So when John Roberts joined the court, his wife, who is also a lawyer, Jane Sullivan Roberts, she stopped practicing, and she stepped down from her role in a political organization that was a pro-life group. And because they felt it was unseemly and presented a conflict. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg became a judge, her husband, Marty Ginsburg, who was one of the country's most prominent tax lawyers, gave up his law practice and became a professor in order not to pose any kind of conflicts of interest. Brett Kavanaugh has recently recused himself from a case because it involved, people think, involved a trade group that his father had been involved in before his father retired. I mean, the judges, for the most part, are very careful about this because they respect the independence of the court and the image of the court. But Clarence Thomas and Ginny are on a very different trajectory here.
Anne in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. And Jane Mayer, I just want to say right off, I love the work that you do. And whenever I hear you're going to be on radio or TV, my ears perk up. So, but
thank you.
My question. Moving forward with my question, it's really just to educate myself and maybe other listeners. Just a small aside. What is the role of a Chief Justice with his justices, case would be Justice Roberts, in all of this topic? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
So now that she's buttered you up, Jane.
and then the hard question. It is a great question, and I'm not sure that I have the answer. I've been wondering exactly the same thing. Justice Roberts, or Chief Justice Roberts, has said that he thinks the court can handle these issues itself. It doesn't want Congress to interfere in any way in these matters. He has made clear he feels very strongly that the court needs to be above reproach. So I imagine that these issues and this kind of criticism rankles him a lot. But does he speak to Justice Thomas about it? The one person I asked who knows anything about sort of the dynamics internally there said that they don't dare speak to each other about these matters, that each justice functions as if they are their own law firm with their own clerks, their own research, and their own standards. And that's how it works.
Or that's how it doesn't work. Something that comes up a few times in your story is Ginny Thomas's near obsession with the so-called deep state. She said that America is in existential danger because of it. She urged Donald Trump when he was president to rid his administration of members of the deep state. She thinks that the deep state, quote unquote, may have been behind the sexual assault allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, which, we know, I think, came from an individual. Does her paranoia over the deep state seem to indicate she's on the fringes, even within her far-right activist circles?
Well, I interviewed a number of people who've interacted with her. One of them said to me she's really volatile and that she basically approaches politics with either you're part of her little group or you are the enemy. So he said she's very tribal. I know from interviewing people in the Trump White House that former President Trump, he liked Clarence Thomas personally, but he told somebody that I interviewed that he thought that Ginny Thomas was quote unquote wacko. So, I mean, she's on the fringe. I mean, she's been dismissed as harmless in some ways for many years. But the problem is that she's now become more and more entangled with these cases that are in front of the court. So it's not just about Ginny Thomas. It's really about the image, the propriety of the Supreme Court itself.
And that's, of course, the heart of your article. And so last question before you go. The funders of these groups that then hire or work with Ginny Thomas to try to influence Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, how related are they to the groups that you chronicled in your article last summer, the big money behind the big lie, and how active will they be on the big lie in this 2022 midterm election year? We, of course, see state after state cracking down on access to elections based on election fraud that never happened.
You know, you see a lot of the same fortunes, the big, big money on the far right funding a lot of the same groups that are involved in all of these activities. It kind of begin to feel a little bit crazy. you know, like you have to make a flow chart about this thing, but you keep coming, I keep stumbling over the same groups. So in, you'll see in this story, if people get a chance to read it, that so Rebecca Mercer is the daughter of a huge hedge fund operator, and she's very involved in funding right-wing politics. She funded this Frank Gaffney's group. It then funded Ginny Thomas, her consulting group, so that money then flowed to the Thomases while that issue was being heard by the court. And so you can kind of trace the money back to some of the same players over and over and over again.
Jane Mayer, chief Washington correspondent for The New Yorker. You can find her latest piece, Is Ginny Thomas a Threat to the Supreme Court, in this week's magazine or online. Thanks, Jane.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.